Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Baker versus Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Mr. O'Rourke.
May it please the court. My name is Thomas O'Rourke, and I'm appearing on behalf of the appellants in this case, Warren and Doris Baker. This case is an appeal from a decision of the United States Tax Court denying the taxpayers the right to treat certain payments from State Farm Insurance Company as long-term capital gains. The issue in this case is whether termination payments paid to Warren Baker by State Farm Insurance are taxable as long-term capital gains or as ordinary income. The facts in this case are straightforward, simple, and not in dispute. Mr. Baker started a State Farm Insurance agency in 1963 with no customers and no policies in place. He operated this business as an independent State Farm agency for approximately 34 years. When he terminated his affiliation with State Farm, there were more than 4,000 policies in force. When Mr. Baker terminated his affiliation with State Farm, State Farm became obligated to pay him termination payments. The estimated payable value was approximately $164,000. The amount of these payments depended on only one thing: premium volume in place during the last 12 years of Mr. Baker's service. This is a standard typically used to value an insurance business in the insurance industry. The Bakers treated the termination payments as proceeds from the sale of goodwill and intangible asset value of Mr. Baker's insurance business and accordingly reported this as long-term capital gains on his 1997 tax return. The amount paid in 1997 was $38,622. The tax court held that Mr. Baker was not entitled to capital gains treatment because it concluded that he did not have a capital asset that was his to sell and that there was no sale in this particular transaction. The issue before this court is, what are these payments? Why are termination payments made? To date, the courts have told us what they are not. Two cases, one Milligan case and the Jackson case. The Milligan case was a Ninth Circuit case. The Jackson case was a tax court case, specified that these payments are not compensation for services. They are not deferred compensation, but they didn't tell us what they were for. That's what this case is all about. Our position is that what Mr. Baker sold was the goodwill value of his business. In order to be entitled to capital gain treatment under the Internal Revenue Code, we must show first and foremost that Mr. Baker had a capital asset. A capital asset is defined under the code as all property. There's been no dispute that intangible asset and goodwill value of a business constitutes a capital asset. Goodwill also has consistently been defined as the expectancy of continued patronage after the transfer of ownership of a business. The goodwill value of a business enables the new business owner to step into the shoes of the former owner.
Well, putting aside the covenant not to compete, could Baker have rejected the termination payments and sold his goodwill to someone else other than State Farm?
Absolutely, Your Honor. There were a series of cases in the state of Illinois, and Mr. Baker resides in the state of Illinois, involving Prudential Insurance Company. And what happened in all those cases, a Prudential agent left Prudential and started to sell insurance to former customers. Prudential sought to enjoin them. They filed a suit alleging tortious interference with Prudential's property using, quote, trade sequence, customer names, and universally the state courts in Illinois rejected that argument. Mr. Baker was in the very same position. He could have left State Farm and sold, marketed to his customers. Now, by doing that, he would have forfeited his termination payments. So, State Farm was a very astute business.
Well, let's run through that again. He leaves State Farm. He can't sell his right to sell State Farm policies to anybody.
Well, but he can't.
They were selling State Farm policies without their permission.
Once he leaves State Farm, he's got no right to market their policies at all.
And he's not selling anything to State Farm yet.
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
Well, once he sold, he sold it for himself. He didn't sell it to anybody. He kept his own list of his own goodwill. But who's he giving that to?
He doesn't give it to anybody. He keeps it. He sells out
in the floor.
Yes.
What does he sell?
He sells the customer lines. And
the customer names State Farm already has them. State Farm policies are there.
Absolutely. They both have them. But our whole argument here is that the relationship between the customers is really the goodwill value. We cited any number of cases
that would be the product itself, the State Farm product itself, which they have an enormous amount of goodwill that they spend some money on advertising and giving them. That's what he sells. They're promising all of them. Kind of a book when he goes and spends a thing.
There's absolutely no dispute about that, Your Honor. There's goodwill here on both sides. State Farm is an excellent company, spends huge amounts of money on advertising, generates its own goodwill.
So if State Farm went no wrong with the sale, it couldn't sell anything.
No, that's not correct, Your Honor. If State Farm doesn't go along with the sale, he can't market State Farm products, but he can go and he can market all
the
things.
No, he can sell it to somebody else, the right to go market that.
Absolutely.
All he's got then is the names of the customers that he can sell to somebody.
The names and the relationship. And
what's the relationship? Describe, what is he selling the relationship?
This is a man who started with no customers.
I know, but he's gone.
He's gone. But the courts have consistently recognized, we cited 7 or 8 cases that are brief, where the court finds that relationship, the personal qualities of that individual salesman, are goodwill. Now, it's not the exclusive goodwill, certainly State Farm has goodwill, but that is goodwill which that individual can sell. Now, if he does, he terminates his right to sell anything that State Farm has to offer, and he also terminates his right to get termination payments. State Farm very wisely structured this agreement to create a disincentive to do that. What State Farm wanted to do was they wanted to create an incentive for all those customers, for those 4,000 policyholders developed by Mr. Baker, to continue their affiliation with State Farm. And they did that by saying, Mr. Baker, we'll compensate you. We will pay you the value of business in place in your last year of service, which coincidentally is the mechanism for valuing an insurance agency.
Well, he could go, to reiterate your position, he could go to, as you said, well, let's use Prudential since that's the one I can recall, with his knowledge of who his customers were and his relationship, and approach them, giving up his termination payment, and approach them with no problem, set up another office as a Prudential agent, and go to all the same customers, and through his relationship he's developed, and then and that's what his goodwill amounts to. There.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. The relationship with his customers.
Well, what should we make of the fact that it was State Farm and not Baker who picked Baker's successor?
Because State Farm is the one, under the terms of their agreement, they had the right to do that. What they told Baker, however, Your Honor, is, Mr. Baker, we'll give you what it's worth. And once we give it to you, it's really none of your concern who we assign it to. But in reality, the agent that they picked was really paying Mr. Baker. Because any agent who gets an assigned policy, and when Mr. Baker left State Farm, all of his policies were assigned to another agent, received a reduced commission. Instead of getting 100% commission, he gets 66 2/3. What is really happening here is State Farm is brokering the business. They're picking another individual whom I'm sure they believe will be as competent and as efficient as Warren Baker is and assigning the policies to that individual. There's no question State Farm exercises an enormous amount of control over the whole procedure.
They weren't very helpful to you in the testimony at trial either, were they?
Your Honor, I don't think they were terribly unhelpful. One of the things...
They've got a different idea on how they're treating that payment, right?
Well, basically what they're treating the payment is a normal business expense in the year the payment is made. And what the State Farm witness testified to when I asked him, why are affiliation payments being made? Because up to that point, nobody had ever answered that question. And he said, well, he said, we've got to have our agent. They're the exclusive loans we have to market to our customers. We need their loyalty. And that's what termination payments is buying, the loyalty of the agent. Instead of going out and marketing his book of business to potential customers, State Farm is paying him, and they're paying him. Why? For the expectancy of continuing patronage. That's the heart and soul of good work. And I would like to emphasize that this court had another case back in the mid-1960s, which I mentioned in the brief. It was not an insurance case, but it was a case that involved surrendering the right to solicit to customers. The name of the case was Karen, K-A-I-N, versus Commissioner, and we cited it both in our original and our reply brief. Karen involved a CPA firm that split up. The departing CPA was paid for one thing and one thing only. He was paid not to solicit former clients of the firm. He agreed, I won't solicit these clients in exchange for, I believe it was $30,000. The issue was, what is that payment? The tax court held, and this court affirmed, that it was really for the goodwill value of the business. By giving up the right to market to customers that he had developed, he gave up goodwill, and that surrender was a sale. The agreement wasn't called a sales agreement. There were no tangible assets sold. All that happened was Mr. Marlick, who was the departing CPA, gave up his right to solicit from clients that he had helped develop. And this court held, the tax court held, and this court affirmed, that was a sale of a capital asset. We're asking the court to follow the Karen decision in this case. We're asking the court to hold that what Mr. Baker really sold here was the goodwill value of his business, and that State Farm bought that from him. Another issue that has come up in this case is whether or not there was a sale. A sale is defined as a transfer of property in exchange for money. That's precisely what happened here. Mr. Baker gave up his right to market to the customer base that he developed in exchange for money, termination payments. That amount of money is computed in accordance with the industry standard for valuing an insurance business. Again, that's exactly what happened in the Karen case. The substance of this transaction is the sale of goodwill. It meets all the requirements for capital gain treatment. I would like to comment on a number of findings. I just noticed I'm into my rebuttal time. I'll save those comments for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Orr.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Francesca Ugolini, Counsel for the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. Obviously, one of the critical issues in this case is whether Mr. Baker owned any assets that he could sell to State Farm. To have capital gain treatment, the taxpayer had the burden of showing that he owned a capital asset and that he sold this capital asset to State Farm in exchange for termination payments. The taxpayer has alleged that he owned goodwill. But just to clarify, the taxpayer did not own customer names. He did not own information about policies or policyholders. Under the agent's agreement, which the taxpayer has conceded governed his relationship with State Farm at all times, all of that information was property of State Farm, absolutely and exclusively. State Farm owned all of the money that came into taxpayer's possession. He simply held it in trust for State Farm.
Well, when you say they own the customer names, I assume that's a list that may be drawn up, but that doesn't keep him from contacting those same customers by memory, does it?
That's right. If he was to contact those customers because he remembered the names, he could certainly do that. And obviously, he would have forfeited the termination payments if he did. However, I think that, in essence, shows that the termination payments are basically for, or at least in part, for a covenant not to compete. And as such, case law generally holds that consideration for a covenant not to compete is ordinary income and not capital gain.
And how else would you characterize it? You said in part.
Right. Well, I'll be honest with you. In this case, it is hard to explain exactly what the termination payments are for. State Farm's representative testified that there were contingent contractual payments made to ensure the loyalty of State Farm agents. I just want to point out that in this case, the termination payments are clearly an accession to wealth, and as such, they constitute gross income under Section 61 of the Internal Revenue Code. Now, the default rule is that all gross income constitutes ordinary income and is taxable at ordinary rates. If the taxpayer wants capital gain treatment, capital gains are taxed at lower, more favorable rates, then the taxpayer has the burden of proving that the payments satisfy the definition of capital gain. The burden is not on the commissioner to precisely characterize what the payments are for. The payments could just be additional inducement to enter the agent's agreement. The agents, State Farm agents, were independent contractors. I presume that means that they didn't have a retirement plan or other similar employee benefits that other employees might have had. So this may have been a way to just provide some sort of general post-retirement income. Actually, State Farm's representative also testified that some agents had come to them throughout the years to ask about providing for their spouses in their old age, and they developed this extended termination payment plan, which is provided for in the agreement as well.
But these are just sort of inferences you're drawing, because it's not real clearly laid out.
That's true, in terms
of the record.
That's true. Those are inferences that I'm drawing, but the point is that for the termination payments to receive capital gain treatment, the burden is on the taxpayer to show that he owned a capital asset and that he sold that capital asset to State Farm. Now, in both cases, there's no evidence in this record that he owned a capital asset. There's also no evidence that he engaged in a sale. The agent's agreement, which, as I mentioned, governed the entire relationship between the taxpayer and State Farm, does not include any indicia of a sale. It's referred to as an agent's agreement. It doesn't contain the word sale. It doesn't refer to a buyer or a purchaser.
What about that case counsel referred to?
To be honest, I don't exactly remember the facts of the Karen case. I did read it pretty recently, and if I recall, the taxpayer in that case clearly owned the business. He owned the customer names. He owned the other intangible assets that were part of the business. He did not transfer tangible assets to the other partners, or I don't remember exactly who the buyer was, whether it was an existing partner or a new partner, but he sold a portion of those intangible assets, the customer names, the customer list. In this case, Mr. Baker...
This is the CPA you're talking about?
Right.
It seems to me that the difference is the CPA is only selling his own services. He's not selling anything else. The insurance salesman is selling the insurance company that he's working for. And when the CPA stops working, it's like a lawyer stopping working. You won't be able to pass it on to somebody else, but not in terms of the capital asset. I mean, otherwise, the widow would be able to claim the when you start practicing law, assuming it was a widow and not a widower.
If I recall correctly, in the Karen case, the accountant at issue clearly owned his own business.
Yeah.
And when he left, he sold a portion of that business to the existing partners. Because...
Yeah. Well, assuming that the people that he's servicing are willing to go to the next person for the personal service. But they may be getting different service from the next partner than they got from him. A different kind of service or different relationship established, but an insurance policy is an insurance policy. You know, whatever. I'm not fighting with you.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out why the thing works differently from one to another.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess that's our position. In this case, for example, Mr. Baker's also alleged that he owned part of the goodwill that he owned was his personal relationship with his customers, that this was an asset personal to himself that he could then pass on to State Farm.
You know how how the commissioner would view a sale of a business, a legal business. For instance, when I first went on the bench, I sold under the theory that what I had to sell was the physical assets of my portion of the business to my six clients.
Actually,
my partners.
Actually, there are cases addressing that issue. I did not cite to them in my brief.
I know. Why tell me?
I hesitate to. I don't want to mention the cases, but
I haven't mentioned them.
Okay.
Save me looking them up.
I think one of the original cases was O'Rear. I believe that was a Sixth Circuit case.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, in that case, there was a state judge who then entered private practice.
Right.
He sold a portion of what he alleged to be his practice
right.
to his partners. The court there found basically all that he was alleging to sell was his ability, his skill,
right.
his sort of personal experience.
A CPA does the same thing.
Right, and the court held that that does not constitute goodwill as an item of property
Thank
that
you.
Cannot be transferred.
Thank you.
In this case, I just also want to touch on the other sort of aspect of goodwill that the taxpayer alleges to have sold, his personal relationships with customers. In the cases that taxpayer cited to in his brief, those cases actually hold that an individual's relationship with a customer can be his personal asset unless there's a covenant not to compete with the corporation or some other agreement that makes the relationship the property of the corporation. And one of those cases that involved an insurance agency, the court gave as an example if the corporation is entitled to the exclusive business of a customer. In this case, the agent's agreement clearly controlled. Under the agent's agreement, Mr. Baker was only allowed to sell contracts for State Farm. The information about policies and policyholders was the absolute property of State Farm, and when he terminated his contract, he accepted the covenant not to compete. So in this case, even the personal relationships that Mr. Baker had with his customers were property of State Farm.
Well, but there's a forfeiture arrangement. If he does compete, then he forfeits that, right?
Right.
So it's not prohibited as such, it's a forfeiture.
Correct, but to the extent that the payments are consideration for not soliciting those customers, then the payments would be consideration for a covenant not to compete, and as such, the ordinary income.
Mm-hmm. But you still get back to the point that I mentioned earlier, is even if there's a list, which I think they concede, and you indicated the list of customers belongs to State Farm, but that wouldn't prevent him, if he wanted to solicit those people from memory, to go out and do it, and that's part of his personal relationship with those customers.
That's true, but ultimately, I think that to the extent he received the termination payments for not competing with State Farm, their consideration for a covenant not to compete and our ordinary income. To the extent that can be characterized as goodwill, I would return to the point that there's no evidence of even a sale of that goodwill in this case. There's also case law holding that you can't sell goodwill without selling part or all of the business to which that goodwill attaches. So even if we could describe Mr. Baker as having some goodwill that was his own, he clearly didn't transfer it in this case. I think, as you might have pointed out earlier, State Farm's representative testified adversely to the taxpayer with respect to a sale. He testified that State Farm views the business as entirely their own business, that they've never negotiated for or entered into any kind of contract to purchase anything from an independent contract insurance agent. In conclusion, the taxpayer had the burden of proof on two points in this case. One was to prove he owned a capital asset. The second was to prove that the termination payments were consideration for the sale of that asset. The tax court found that the taxpayer did not satisfy his burden on either factual point. The tax court's finding is not clearly erroneous. The court has no further questions. I'm done.
Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
Mr. O'Rourke.
I would like to address several points made by counsel in her excellent oral argument. A point that has troubled me throughout is the commissioner argues and the tax court found that Mr. Baker didn't have anything he could sell. Why did State Farm give him $164,000 for nothing? Because he did have something to sell. And contrary to what counsel argues, the taxpayer did satisfy their burden of proof. What we established was Mr. Baker took a business that had nothing and established a policy base of 4,000 policies. He had a relationship with those customers. At least in part, the reason why those customers bought insurance was because of him. That is what the courts have consistently defined as goodwill. He did have something that he could sell, but State Farm structured an agreement to take away that incentive. Mr. Baker could have walked out the door, taken down a State Farm sign, put up a Prudential sign, and under the laws of this state, he would have been perfectly free to do that. And if he would have, undoubtedly, some or maybe all of his customers would have followed him. State Farm didn't want that to happen because they're a prudent business owner, so they created a mechanism to prevent him from doing that. They gave him an economic incentive to sell to State Farm. The fact that the transaction was not called a sale, well, neither was the transaction in Karen. It was called a business dissolution. All Mr. Monmouth did was give up his right to solicit customers he developed. That's exactly what happened here. The court interpreted that transaction in accord with economic reality. It treated it as a sale because that's what it was. Mr. Monmouth and here, Mr. Baker, got money in exchange for giving up his right to solicit customers he had developed. Counsel also mentioned covenant not to compete. That was an issue, and if I recall, the State Farm representative said, there is no covenant not to compete in this agreement. All there is there's an enforcement mechanism which says that if Mr. Baker tries to solicit from his former customers, he forfeits termination payments. That was the stick that State Farm held. That was the consideration here, those termination payments. Now, obviously, Mr. Baker chose to honor his agreement. He had a long, productive relationship with State Farm. It was an excellent relationship. It redounded to the benefit of both of them. And when the relationship ended, State Farm bought the goodwill value of Mr. Baker's business, his relationship with his customers. He worked with him to transfer that goodwill to his successor agent. That, I submit to this court, is the sale of a capital asset. I ask the court to follow its decision in Karen to reach that same result here and to reverse the decision of the U.S. Tax Court. I thank you very much, and if the court has no further questions. Thank you,
Mr. Rourke. Thanks to both counsel for an excellent argument.